Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
The hardest bit was just the time that when we knew Dad was going to die, and it was those 10 days, and those 10 days of being around each other, and like it became kind of like a duty competition or a loyalty competition. Like, no, I'll stay tonight. I'll stay in the little tiny room. Oh yeah, it was just so stressful.
Welcome to Grief Encounters with me, Sasha Hamrogue.
And I'm Venetia Quick. We're a weekly podcast that looks at an issue that affects us all and yet remains so difficult to talk about.
We'll be chatting to guests from all walks of life on the subject of death and all that comes with it.
Our main aim is to motivate, comfort, and create a modern space for people to share their own experiences.
Could you think of someone that could benefit in listening? Tell them about Grief Encounters, out every single Tuesday. Today on the podcast, we met with the acclaimed theatre performer Louise White to speak about her latest production, This is the Funeral of Your Life. And let's just say that talking about funerals, there's like absolutely no end to that conversation. They're so weird.
It is the weirdest thing.
Yeah,
actually, so weird. Funeral. But I do know one thing is that I'm so planning my own. Because you go to so many funerals and I think... Personally, I think it's really important because it's the last time anybody is going to be talking about, well, not talking about,
well,
but
gathering in your name.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think the people, especially if it's sudden, I think the people that are left behind have a responsibility to give that person the funeral they deserve, no matter how hard it is. I feel very passionate about is that when you go to a funeral of somebody, and it doesn't reflect their personality, it doesn't reflect them, you don't really come away with a sense of who they were or what they liked or what they did. And I think that's what a funeral is. It's like it's the last time people are going to publicly acknowledge this person amongst their friends, their children's friends, their spouse's friends, you know, and extended family. So I think it's
really important.
And do you
think people feel a little bit scared about pushing the boundaries of what's acceptable? I know you talked about Martin and like the kind of person he was. Mm. So you decided like you really wanted to make sure that that was reflected.
Well, oh, absolutely. And it was sort of, I mean, I remember the vicar coming to the house and he had, I always called them running orders, but it was an order of service. And it was actually from somebody else that we knew who died previously. And he was like, can I just make this suggestion? And I was like, no. Mm. I said, I know exactly what we want, what music we want, how it's going to be, the photos, the live music, you know. And the only thing, in fairness, he was so good about it. Like I got everything I wanted from Kylie and Jason to you two to all of my Love Actually photos and everything. And the only thing he had a slight reticence about was playing AC/DC going back down the aisle. But I think that's because he thought it was going to be Highway to Hell or something.
Yeah.
But
bit of a conflict.
But it was such an emotional event. The vicar called it Martin's gig, but it was such an emotional time that I think when he was going back down the aisle and we had AC/DC, You Shook Me All Night Long, because that's what we had at our wedding coming back down the aisle, that everyone just started clapping. Mm. And it was like you could feel it was almost like a release of tension and a celebration. Mm. And, you know, that really reflected the person that Martin was. And that, like, to me, is the fact that people still talk about his gig, to me, meant we sent him off in the right way.
Yeah, the way that he should have been. Mm. And I think he sounds like he would have been like incredibly proud of you, because
hopefully
doing that in a time when you're really like at your worst. But I know with my mom,
overdrive though.
You could, yeah, of course. My mum, we played Patricia the Stripper. Because when we were kids, Christa Berg's Patricia the Stripper was the song she used to play for us when we used to get dressed up. And like everyone, I mean, everyone there got it. And I think that's the other thing. If the people who are there knew the person, they get it. They get that you're, it's totally spot on. And we had a great conversation with Louise about it. Obviously, thinking about your own funeral is really fascinating. And like you said, I think it makes you think about planning that maybe in a way that you would never have thought of before.
I also think, you know, if you can leave, for the people that are left behind, if you can leave a sort of some sort of template, nobody likes talking about it because it's like this sort of, it's like wills. Nobody likes talking about wills or what, unless you're a money grabber. Do you know what I mean? Nobody in the family likes, oh, well, we're going to leave it. No, I don't want to know. Yeah. You know, I don't want to think about it. But I actually think now that everybody should have a template left of what they'd like. You know, and sort of some sort of idea, because if you think of the people who are left behind, what they're going through, then it's sort of like, it's not fair almost to leave it on them. So like you should be going, I want photos, I want this song, I'd like this person to play the piano, I'd like this person to sing. And I think that actually everybody should, you know, obviously, you know, with people dying suddenly and stuff, you don't get the chance, but I think you should articulate it to
and even when you're well and there's no there's nothing in sight, you're not ill, you're not, so that you can look at it without that sort of, it can be hard when, I suppose, when you're really sick, you're very afraid of what's going to happen next, so maybe you're pushing it away. But when you're well and you're maybe a little bit more able for the conversation, it is an important conversation to have with your family.
Completely. Oh no, I agree. I mean, I think it's definitely something, I actually said it to a friend. And I said, you know, when we said sometime we'll talk about mine. And she's like, no pressure. So, you know, it's sort of, I think it, she sort of got the idea that I'd like the same sort of thing. The expression of grief through art can be an extremely cathartic experience for anybody who's experienced any sort of loss. Now, today's guest is the acclaimed performance artist Louise White. She's been exploring this relationship on stage now for a number of years and is here today to speak to us about her latest project, This Is the Funeral of Your Life, which is currently touring the country right now. Hi, Louise.
Hi.
So, first of all, this is the funeral of your life. I mean, it's, what is it about? Why did you come up with this idea?
Yeah, the title is always kind of heavy. I always have to say, it's fun. You know, that's why we have a big carnival-esque sign when the audience come into the space to be like, hey, it's like a game show.
Yeah.
So I came up with it after my reaction to my dad's funeral. So he was 84 when he died and he'd had a really full life. And myself and my five siblings, so the six of us and my mum, were around him when he died. So all in all, in terms of like what you would wish for the moment of death, it was all, you know, it was great to be there for him. It was very difficult and intense and painful, but I suppose there wasn't a feeling that dad still had unresolved things, like he'd lived a really full life. So that was an intense time in the hospital. We were with him for 10 days and you know, two of my siblings had to get flown home. So it was kind of, you know, it was high stakes and full on. So I hadn't really thought much about his funeral. You know, it hadn't been a thing really that I thought about at all. And then, you know, it was very quickly planned with the undertaker, bish, bash, bosh. You know, there was no conflict or anything like that with my family about what we were going to do. And then the funeral happened and I was just completely overwhelmed by it. I mean, obviously overwhelmed by the significance of all the moments that you go through to realise your father is one step closer to being gone and the finality of it. But the other thing that I was really taken by was the whole huge ritual and ceremony of it and the way in which somebody is remembered and eulogised. And afterwards, I just couldn't shake the feeling of like asking myself, had I done enough? Was I enough? Would I ever be remembered in this way? And it was persistent, like that feeling was persistent. It wasn't just an occasional thing. And because it just kept persisting, then I realised that I needed to work it out artistically.
I think it's such a great thing to take on artistically, because I think no one really talks about when you're at the centre of it, when you're a family member that's at the centre of those things, really how you'll remember it forever. Even though it can feel like a bit of a whirlwind and it's this real, but it's very overwhelming. Mm-hmm. Also surreal.
But I think it's such an important thing, funeral and the whole, because that is the one time where everybody comes together and everybody's in that one moment and it's almost like it's, there's a huge, I sort of felt there was a huge responsibility on me to make sure the funeral fitted my husband to the same degree that he was a very larger than life character. He ran nightclubs. He was, you know, you couldn't just have a regular funeral. Like you had to have AC/DC and you had to, you know, but that's a huge, it's quite, especially in the days after when it's all really blurry and you don't really know what you're doing. It is quite a big responsibility that people go away going, that was a brilliant funeral.
Right, yeah.
You know, afterwards.
So it's some of the components. So one of the things that you were just saying there about the idea of everybody coming together, but that's true, but like we had spent so much time together as a family and like in this really intense time that while you're all trying to pull together, like there's times when you're just driving each other mental, like somebody's eating an apple beside you in
and the noise outside
the CCU and you're just like, oh my God, like, you know what I mean? And the same time is your experience of the funeral is going to be significantly different than everybody else's, even though you are in this communal experience. The idea of the show is that we ask the audience to come together. We ask them with these thought experiments that are fun and comedic. We ask them to take on the idea of letting go, of taking on the idea conceptually that they're going to die, and then they let it go, and then the show happens, continues on, but like it's where we take the time to plan the funeral songs, and then we try to create a particular funeral ceremony for them where it's it has impact enough, or it's real enough, or significant enough that they can imagine that it's about them, but it also has to be loose enough that you don't say anything that will trigger someone to go, that would never happen for me. Do you know what I mean? So we try to identify what the key life moments are in people and the key signposts of like things about wanting to belong, things about wanting to find your tribe. Like we have a eulogy at one part that we get an audience member to perform. So they've never seen it before and we have cue cards and we invite them up and it's created in this really tender moment of the show. And it's one of the most impactful moments of the show because we've taken a really long time to figure out how do you write a eulogy for everyone and no one? And how do you make it sparse enough and impactful enough? And yeah, so these are all of the things that I reflected on after.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters, May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
If you're looking for a safe haven to express how you feel, share articles, photos, and memories of your loved ones, join the Grief Encounters Facebook group, a place for support, compassion, and empathy for those grieving.
Do you feel that people are self-aware enough to, because I know obviously when you have experienced loss or death in your own life, I think your self-awareness starts to grow because obviously like up until that point, you're not thinking about your mortality quite as much. And then the first time somebody you lose someone, your mortality starts to become a little bit more in your consciousness. But being self-aware enough to think about how you'll be perceived when you're gone, it's pretty tough. Like that's like...
Yeah, and it's a fiery thing. Like, it is a fiery thing. And it also seems, whatever about being self-aware, it also seems self-indulgent, particularly in the Irish psyche, you know, to say that you give a shit about how you're going to be remembered and to say that you've gone far enough to think, what will it sound like when somebody's up in the pulpit or wherever that venue is talking about me? So that was the thing that when I couldn't shake it and then I was mentioning it to other people and I'd say, yeah, this is the thing. I think I have to make this show about funerals because I can't stop thinking about it. And people's eyes would just widen and they'd be like, oh my God, me too. and they're like mortified to say it. So in this, we're trying to give people the permission and the structures where nobody feels exposed, but where you're like, we're like, come on, it's all right to think about it. We'll guide you through it. We'll facilitate it, but go there.
See, I wonder about that as well. What you're saying is, I went to a funeral recently, and it was sort of a young person who had been sick for quite a while. And it was very much as though the priest didn't know her. When the kids' names was left out, it was I found it actually quite more traumatic because of that. And I sort of, it did make me afterwards think about, like, everybody's going to die at some point. So maybe you should just start putting in place, I want these songs. I want those photos. You know, I don't want so-and-so speaking because I don't like them. I want that person. Do you know what I mean?
Or oh, my God, absolutely. I couldn't agree more, because the thing is, after Dad's funeral, my dad's funeral was really, it was just really, like, well done. It was a really good reflection of the man. My brother gave this amazing eulogy where I was just like, oh, God, I didn't realise that eulogies were also biographies. You know, he was like, and when he was 12, he played rugby with Rat Downey. And then when he was, you know, you can imagine 84 years doing the whole thing.
But isn't that so important? Because it's actually recognising what people have given to life, or given to other people's lives, or what they've done. They haven't just lived. And
I have to say, I found that I did the eulogy for both of my parents, and I found the weight of that very difficult.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Like, it was kind of a beautiful moment writing it, but there was also like a pressure, like just like you're talking about, it's a whole life to look at and to do them proud. And, you know, I suppose I know that both of them would have been proud anyway. Like, they would have been like, you did a great job. But the weight of standing in front of everyone and trying to capture who they were, and also truthfully, because my perception of them versus as a child is sort of a different perception of maybe how they saw themselves. So
I remember my brother saying to me, he was sitting at the kitchen table, and he was like, so is there anything you want me to include? And I was like, I don't know, I guess just about like how he always taught us to try and, you know, be good in the community and things. And he was like, oh, okay. But I didn't really think about what he was going to write. And then when he did the eulogy, I was like, oh my God, I could never have done that. Like, it was so,
it's pressure.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the advantage of being the fifth kid. I'm never going to have to do that.
But it is, I mean, like, it is. I think also writing something like that, I think if you're doing something on, like, obviously in the morning, I would, you know, you can't see your listeners, you know, or with something like this. But when you're standing in front of 300 odd people and doing something that's so important, I think it's like delivering the light and shade, and you know, you sort of at the back of your mind, like, I remember when I was writing Martin's, going, I'm gonna have to be funny here as well, because people
expect
my expectation was people would expect me to be funny as well, and that's sort of, it's hard to do, you find it, but it is a hard, it's just, I think it's the hardest thing you ever write.
I'd say so.
You know,
I'd say so. I mean, I've never, I've only done
or
it.
Or perform, or because it is a performance.
I've only had to do it for the show. And with that, like, I have, you know, I don't, I have to represent, I guess, in a way, the humanity of the audience, but I don't have to represent a real, actual person. So it's really like, feels very alive to me now when you're saying that about writing it for your husband. I can't imagine it. I assume my husband and I would write each other's eulogies, but like, it's heavy.
There's also the, like, weird practicalities around funerals that are, like, really strange, like buying your outfit to go to a funeral.
Isn't that stuff like... And who was it I said it to? I was like, well, I still have one in my wardrobe, and I'm like, I'm obviously going to keep that one, and I'll just wear it for mums. And just, people are like, I'm like, well, like, I don't want to have to go to Dunstores in Portlaoise again and go around and around and be like, can't wear that, can't wear this. Like, I don't want to be shopping.
Oh my God.
Again.
You see, I find that a weird thing to do, is to go and buy something new. I remember, like, because I just wore something. I think the day before, Martin's best friend said, now, what are you going to wear? Because she also knew me, I like my clothes. She also knew me that a few days later, I'd be going, what was I thinking? Do you know that way? So I think that was, and then she arranged a hairdresser to come to the house. And I was like, why? Why do I need a hairdresser? Why do I need, you know, any of that? But I do know people who, on the day of funerals, go and get their hair done, or, you know, and it's, and I suppose that's right, because it's sort of like,
I guess they,
you know,
feel the
go
pressure.
You go to a party and get your hair done. So,
you're seeing all these people just, in your life, and yet it does seem so frivolous. I remember people dropping off black tights, which was like spot on. Just tights, just like you said, the Dunstores thing really got me. Like, but just dropping off tights. Wow. Like little things are like
but
underwear.
Yeah. Dying like you might to not do something for you. So can I do anything? Like, could you just get me a pair of like 40 denier? And they're like, done. Done. Yeah, yeah, you know, they're dying to do
and you've given them something that they can.
No, no.
There's also the dark side of funerals, which is, I think, would be hard for anyone if they knew was going on, the person that's passed, like the fighting and the like that stuff, the drinking. It's the, like bad stuff bubbles to the surface as well for families. Is that just the intensity, I think, of everything culminating to one big event?
Yeah, I mean, the things that I experienced, the hardest bit was just the time that when we knew Dad was going to die, and it was those 10 days, and those 10 days of being around each other, and like it became kind of like a duty competition or a loyalty competition. Like, no, I'll stay tonight. I'll stay in the little tiny room that there's like, you know, seven of us in this tiny little room, and there's another family. You could only have two people in the CCU at any one time. So people were like sleeping over, so that even though you couldn't be in with Dad, so that he wouldn't be left on his own. And it just became, it was so... Oh, yeah, it was just so stressful. It was just so stressful. Nobody wanted to hear from each other anymore. You can't even do small talk anymore. You can't talk about it anymore. So all of that I just found, yeah, really stressful.
And I think people as well, I mean, we've talked about how people grieve in different ways. And they do. And I mean, that's something I think I've learned even about myself is, you know, how I expected, not that I expected, well, hadn't, it wasn't on the cards that soon, but how I would have expected myself to grieve is not actually how I have done.
Yeah, like
I've been totally different in a lot of ways than I would have thought.
Yeah.
And I think that's the other thing that happens as well, is there's an expectation that people are all going to grieve the same way, but of
course
they don't.
Or together.
And they don't. God, and some people run for the hills.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I've had words with somebody who was very close to Martin as well, because I just couldn't get my head around their way of doing the grief thing. And it's sort of, they sort of said to people, not everybody does it your way. And I'm like, okay, fair enough. But it is, I mean, I think that's a very difficult thing to navigate as adults. And you can see why, after somebody passes away, why adults fall out or why they don't get on anymore. You can sort of see why that happens.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And also people trying to control your grief or trying to support your grief in this really intense way where you're like, you don't need to keep rubbing my back. I'm actually fine.
Yeah.
Like, I want to do this differently. Or just even in a funny way, I was doing a placement in Leash at the time. So I live in Dublin, but I was down with my mum every Monday and Tuesday every week just after I'd had my first son. So I was doing my teaching placement there. And like myself and mom would be like, okay, fine, this will be like 2 months, 3 months after the funeral. But people kept calling to her in the evenings because they were worried she was going to be lonely, and she'd be like, Jesus Christ, don't answer that door. She would be like, you know, she had kind of gone through it all with Dad for the last few years. She'd really looked after him. She has a, you know, a healthy community life. She spoke a lot to her, you know, she's a strong faith. She spoke a lot to her priest about it in the run up to it and afterwards. So I feel like she dealt with it all in her way, you know, like she's quite a resilient woman. You know, I had other friends who's lost a dad at the same time and their mother just didn't know what to do. So it was people assuming that she wanted to be minded or petted, and that's just not her way at all. So she would literally be like running out, there's a living room, like you pass the window to ring the front door, she'd be running out and being like, don't answer that door.
I'm like, but okay. Also some days you're not in the mood either, like you're
she's
really tired
here.
Or you're just whatever, like the kids are up the door, hi, it's like
exactly, and they stay for 3 hours and you're like, would you like another cup of tea?
You're actually putting more pressure. That's actually making things harder for
absolutely.
The person.
I mean, look, it's hard. Like, we don't know really what to do.
How do you do it?
Like, and it's only when you've had a funeral. That's the thing. I'm like, I'm amazing at funerals now, but I have to go through it to know how to bridge the gap and be able to say I'm sorry and give condolences and give respect, not be intense, make an occasional joke, you know, these kind of...
Well, I think that's important, isn't it? Humor.
Yeah, of course.
Thing. You have to have some sort of humour somewhere, because also, especially if the person was a humorous person or whatever, like, they would want everyone sitting around sort of going... Do you know that way?
Absolutely.
I remember walking down with my mother. We had like... She died in America. So we had her like memorial service, which my mom was like... totally like a hippie at heart and like super cool. So we just had like it in a park with loads of butterflies like printed up everywhere and just had her friends. It was complete like non-religious, even though she was a spiritual person, she wasn't a religious person. So we tried to reflect her as best we could. But then we had a memorial service a memorial mass here in Tipperary a month later where she was from. And I remember walking down carrying her ashes and one of my friends, spot on as well, gave me kind of a like a silly laugh, jokey smile, but like a real like they could pick up that I felt quite nervous doing what I was doing, and they came and I, my face like broke into a huge, and I always felt kind of guilty that other people might have seen that, but in reality, like that person gave me just that bit of like levity and break that I just felt like I needed to have. I felt on show, I felt like everyone was looking at me, I was carrying this little box of, I was just felt I'm shy, like I went, and it just gave me,
it's actually interesting that you say that, and I think that's a whole other thing, is your behavior and your idea of how people perceive you when you behave afterwards. I mean, friends of mine from school, actually, mine passed away in February, and then in the June they were sort of, you know, let's go for a few drinks, whatever, and I hadn't seen a couple of them for years, and we used to always get on well in school, and we'd such a laugh, and I suppose because I hadn't seen them and it was new people, that we literally laughed for 3 hours. Yeah. And there's people I sort of knew from the area sitting in the pub beside me. And I just, the next day I was going, God, they were sick. Really, I'm the most unfeeling that I'm told. Oh, you get this thing like everyone, you're having a bad day and you might have had a good night the night before where you've been seen to laugh twice. And everyone sort of, you've got sort of, oh, she's fine. She's totally fine. And of course, that's not how it works.
No, it's like you, you know, you have that judgment towards your, I mean, there's so much judgment in grief anyway, just self-judgment, like how should I be?
Am I doing this right? Is it okay to get over this? I remember deciding to have another kid and like conceiving the kid quite soon after Dad died. And my brother being like, well, that was quick. Like that was really like just after Dad died. And I was kind of like, yeah, no, and like, do you know what I mean? Like, go on. It takes 9 months to cook them. So, you know.
Yeah.
I was pregnant 8 months after my mom died. And I think there were people that were concerned about that.
Yeah.
Would you be able to handle yourself? Like,
And that sort of stuff is like, I think you have to really call the shots yourself and feel comfortable, even though that's easier said than done.
Yeah, no, big time.
Tell us a little bit more about how people are, have you had feedback as to how people are perceiving the show? Do you think people are drawn to it who have been through the experience, or people are drawn to it who haven't been? Because I could see like kind of a fascination if you're not really somebody that has lost someone close to you, that you might be kind of more comfortable in that setting.
I think it's a bit of both, really. Like, people are just fascinated with funerals. Like, I made this myself for my own reasons, like for my own artistic impulse. And it's been the show that people have just grabbed onto so much. And it's a show that after, it's, you know, it's 65 minutes long. And, you know, straight afterwards, people come up and they're grabbing my arms and they're like, they're just dying to tell me stories. Tell me, there's a lot of kind of tongue-in-cheek observations about funerals. Like, we've people making sandwiches and we've cups of tea and we have, do you know what I mean? We have a lot of, like, we have relentless sandwich making. It just keeps lasagnas. Going and there's just more lasagnas and tarts. There's just more and more and more and more Brennan's bread sliced pans just keep coming on the stage and you know, so we do that kind of riffing with things like that and people can't get over the kind of simplicity of that and how it's very funny. And I think it's the idea, I genuinely think it is both camps, because I think it's people get to reflect on it. If they've gone through it, they see a different kind of truth in it than if they haven't lost somebody themselves but they've all been to funerals. And the other thing is, the idea in it is that we take the audience on a journey, like we guide them through this thing where they are genuinely allowed to think about themselves in a way that they do it as a congregation, they do it in as the audience unit, but so you're never asked what are you thinking right now, you're never exposed in that way, but they get to think about themselves in that way. So I think they feel like seen, or they feel like held in some way where they've been allowed to go on that visualization process. So people feel, I had no idea how it was going to be perceived in the first instance. I was just trying to make the show that I needed to make, but afterwards people were saying that they found it uplifting, or they found it, I mean, it is genuine, is there's a lot of laughs in it, even sometimes depending on what the audience, because the audience is, we rely on them a lot because we connect with them a lot, and there's some audience participation moments now, not, you know, hairy awkward like in comedy where you get somebody up on stage and you fleece them. It's actually, we just get them to do things like make sandwiches or read a eulogy or be pallbearers, things that happen in that kind of community context. So nobody has to generate material themselves. But at the beginning, you know, when they're connected to at the beginning or addressed or somebody asks them a question, you know, people are quite shy. And by the end, they're all craning their necks out, dying to be like, oh, but they want to help. You know, they want to be part of it. So there's a lot of, there's a lot of laughter in it.
Is the shaking of the hands, does that come up at all? This Irish thing.
No, peace be with you. Honestly, there is not enough like dramatic anything in that to do it. That's just death.
Yeah. Death to theatre. Do you know that you're talking about Peace Be With You?
No, I'm talking about outside the door. After the door.
Oh, yeah. No,
you could be there for weeks.
We have a that. We have a note. There's a refrain where one of the performers is like, Peace Be With You. Sorry for your last Peace Be With You. Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm very sorry. Excuse me. People are literally pushing me out of the way to get in at my mom. Like, I was just like, hello. I'm actually standing beside her for support. And they were just like, sorry, there now. Hi, Mary.
And it's always cold. I remember, like, because I did it on my own. It was like, it felt like hours. My friend actually just came and got me. He's like, that's it. That's enough.
You're done.
Good call on your friend's part.
Oh, yeah, no, big time.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about when the show is running until.
So we're on national tour for the month of February. We've done Galway and Drigt and Project Arts Centre in Temple Bar. And then on the 22nd of February, we are in Dunamace Arts Centre. And then the following week, we are in Everyman in Cork for two nights. That's the Monday and Tuesday. And we're also in Visual Carlo on the Friday night.
Louise White, thank you so much. What a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.